Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
Man, it feels good to be back to normal after all that snow and stuff. And yesterday, still, I had to go to a local casino and cash a hefty winning ticket on the Eagles-Redskins game. I say that to rub it in Tim Zimmer's face. And there was still snow on the ground in the parking lot. And who'd have thought, it might still be there because this is a big pile. Who'd have thought that there would still be snow around a week after the snow event? Highs today of 61, 66 tomorrow. Come Thursday, we'll be at 73 degrees, close to the mid-70s. Chance for showers on Friday, highs of 69. Then, man, you're talking about a stretch of Chamber of Commerce weather, perfect for Super Bowl week. Highs of 62, partly cloudy on Saturday. Then sunshine, 67 Sunday, 67 Monday, 67 Tuesday. A little bit cooler on Wednesday, 62. And hopefully it'll be just beautiful and sparkling all the way through the Super Bowl. I don't know. Somebody texted me something, Commanders. I don't know if I said something wrong or not. Did I say Redskins? I'm sorry. Pardon me. Sorry about that. Old habits die hard. David Schultz joins me, professor of political science at Hamline University. How you doing, David Schultz?
I am doing very well, and I hope you're doing well, too.
Well, we are. You know, we had that record snowfall, and you guys are used to that. We're not.
Yeah, you actually have received more snow this winter than we have received this winter, which is obviously really strange because we're having another almost snowless winter at this point.
Well, if I had spoken to you last week, I'd have told you to come get it because it wasn't easy. Let me read some text. Go ahead.
I was going to say, it's hard driving.
Let me read some texts that came in. I asked people to text in their thoughts on Donald Trump's first week as the president. Somebody texted in and said he's the man, changed that Constitution so he can run for a third term. Okay, if you do that, keep in mind you could have Barack Obama v. Donald Trump for the championship. Somebody else said, like Trump or not, refreshing to have a president try to do what he said he was going to do. Somebody else said his first week's been the equivalent of a garbage can. Somebody else said, meh, I just want to know why my 401 tanked yesterday. Well, I will say to that, if you're watching it day to day, it's going to drive you crazy. And if you're close to retirement, you shouldn't be in the market anyway. First week, he already violated the law. I see this trend continuing with zero consequences. He has nothing to lose. He will be close to death at the end of his term. This will be a bad 4 years for our country. Thoughts, David Schultz, on Donald Trump's first week of the presidency. And I got to say that the inauguration and so forth was lost with our preparations for the snowfall. But Donald Trump is Donald Trump. And I think anybody that is expecting anything different would be kidding themselves, right?
I think you're absolutely correct. And I was going to say, sounds like from the comments that you're getting that he's proving yet again to be a very divisive or divisive figure, depending how you want to pronounce the term. And that's exactly true. You know, he's living up to his character. And when I say that, I think of all the years. This is going back now a long time when he was the host of The Apprentice in terms of kind of the person or the persona he created. That's who he created during his first term as presidency. And that's Trump again. We're getting exactly what we thought, and he's doing exactly what he said he was going to do. Now, whether or not those are good policies, good orders, whether they're legal or not, I mean, we're going to reach conclusions or disagreements on that also. But he's doing, I think, exactly what everybody predicted he was going to do.
Let's talk about legality of what he's doing and what that means, because you can't, I don't know, it seems like you can have opinions on things. When it comes to the law, only the courts should or can have opinions, right? Tell me about that, David.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's issued, I've lost a count now, well over 100 executive orders, and we have to sort of divide them up. Some of his executive orders, I just think, are sort of like press release statements, saying he's going to do certain things or planning on doing certain things. They haven't really happened. I mean, some of them are things that he can actually bring about some kind of changes on, again, in terms of, let us say, maybe the military or whatever. But there's some of them, for example, like the order he gave last week of getting rid of birthright citizenship, that under the current law, under current constitution, that's clearly an illegal order, unconstitutional. A court has already stated for what's going to happen. You know, but a lot of things we're going to see, he's going to be challenged in court, much in the same way that he was in his first term as president of the United States. And just to sort of point out to people, you know, that if we go back to Franklin Roosevelt up to the present and look at all the different administrations in court, the Trump administration, the first one, had the worst record in court of any of those presidencies. Barely half of what the administration did was upheld in the courts. And so, I suspect we're going to see a lot of court challenges and a lot of things struck down also this time. And that, again, seems to be no surprise in terms of where the Trump administration is.
When it comes to usually what the president says matters, right? And I don't mean this disrespectfully at all, but in the first Trump term, it kind of bugged me because some of the things he said were very unpresidential. And I thought, well, you know, usually presidents choose their words very carefully because the world is listening. But in this case, I'm going to get through the next 4 years, not really worrying about that, because I got to believe the rest of the world's leaders know who Donald Trump is as well. And they realize that sometimes what he says is just him saying stuff, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of it is, again, going back to it, what I said before, you know, Trump has honed a personality, you know, through the media, through pop culture, you know, for, I'll say, maybe his entire life. And there's certain things that he does. I mean, he likes the limelight. There's no question he likes to be in the limelight. I think he sometimes says things, you know, to stay in the limelight or just to get a reaction out of people. And I think we're all sort of learning the fact that you can't react either positively or negatively or get hysterical, good or bad, for everything that he does. You know, if you do that...
Say that again, please.
You just can't get hysterical for everything that he says at this point. If you do, you're going to burn yourself out really rapidly at this point. You have to put it in context and say, Trump is just being Trump. Some things he's just going to say just to get a reaction. And just let it go. Let it go. And at some point, just assess over, I don't know, several months or a year or something, and look at and ask the question, you know, what has he really done? What has he accomplished, et cetera, et cetera. But I think people are just reacting like every second, everything that he says. And I don't know, you can't live like that.
I mean, David. You just summed it up. That's why I asked you to say it again, because you just summed it up. I think he's got some good ideas. I think he's got some bad ideas. I do think the way he carries himself as the president of the United States is not the way a president should carry himself. But that being said, the country has spoken. That's who they elected as the president, and he's going to carry himself like he carries himself. And I'm not going to set what hair I have left on fire every time he does it, because all I'm going to do is drive myself crazy for 4 years. And what's that going to accomplish, really? Nothing.
Well, it's not going to accomplish anything. I know I give a lot of talks locally in Minnesota to, like, community groups, you know, like Kiwanis clubs, you know what I mean, like that, like, you know, Lions clubs, things like that. And I'll go, and there'll be people who will be, you know, I'll give talks, and you're right. I mean, they're literally pulling their hair one way or the other. And I always sort of tell them, take a deep breath. It's got to be thinking about the longer game and sort out, like, the bluster or the rhetoric from what he's actually doing. Because, again, there may be some, if you think about, like, his statements about Greenland, I mean, his statements about taking over Greenland, you know, on one level are totally ridiculous. But if you look behind it and say that, listen, as the Arctic is defrosting, that's going to become a strategic area. You know, behind his statement about Greenland is the idea of saying that, what, the United States needs to be better prepared, you know, for military conflict or what, the race for minerals in the Arctic. That's not a bad statement. That's not a bad thing to be thinking about. And so the way he says things may not be the way all of us do it. I say this to my students sometimes. Not all of us say, please, thank you, yes, sir, no, sir, three bags full. We don't all speak the perfect English, you know, in our everyday life, you know, and maybe we just have to get used to it, our own friends and how they speak. Maybe we have to do that with the president.
He's a New Yorker, right? That's part of
yes.
it. And something else, too, I think, is that what can drive people crazy is that when you talk about Greenland and the strategy there, that also makes an argument that the climate is changing and the planet is warming without admitting that the climate is changing and the planet is warming. But you have to get beyond all of that, and you just got to look at the long game, right?
Exactly. That's exactly the point we have here. And if he's talking about the same thing about the Panama Canal, we're not going to go back and take over the Panama Canal. But if he's talking about the fact that China is making lots of strategic moves in South America through trade, and maybe we need to be better preparing ourselves or change our strategy down there. Yeah, that part makes sense. The bluster about the canal doesn't. You know, I'm just trying to think of maybe sometimes when people whisper, we don't hear them and they have to shout. And maybe this is his version of shouting. He gets our attention, but now we've got to figure out how to peel behind it. So his rhetoric upsets us. It informs us, but I think we just can't. So he may be his own best friend and his own best enemy in terms of how he phrases things, because he gets our attention, but then he also, I don't know, obscures sometimes what it is he's really trying to get at.
I go back to, and we got to take a break for traffic here, but I go back to Ronald Reagan when he was on a, supposedly, I don't know what the truth is, we'll never know whether he knew the mic was open or not, but when he said, check the testing 1, 2, 3 to the Russians, we begin bombing in 5 seconds, maybe he knew he was on an open mic, maybe he didn't. Maybe he was trying to send a message that he was a crazy old man, or at least have the Russians think that. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, we'll never know. 623, traffic now, WWL. All right, 627, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with a friend, David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University and a professor of law, which brings me to the executive orders, David, and the courts, and how the composition of the courts may or may not have changed since Trump's first term. I know the Supreme Court certainly has changed, but basically, what is the role of the courts as it relates to these executive orders that he's issued and the likelihood that a lot more of them will be upheld than before?
Well, right now we have, if we look at the entire composition of all the federal courts, District Court of Appeals and Supreme Court, it's about 51% Democrats. So that's just in different parts of the country have more Democrats versus Republicans. I just want to sort of throw that out there. It's clearly different than was his first term, where he's got more judges on his side. It's going to be a tough call on these because even though judges want to claim that they're not biased, they're only looking at it solely from the perspective of law, we do know that that their ideology does factor it in some ways. Some of Trump's executive orders will not get challenged. Some of them will get challenged, either on what we're going to call the substance, you know, what he's actually saying. Some will be challenged on how he issued the orders. Yeah. It's going to be a tough call, but I would say probably more of them get upheld than struck down. But he's still going to see a lot of them that are going to get bogged down in the courts for many, many years, because even if he eventually does win, there's going to be so many lawsuits, and they're going to be spending so much time defending so many of them. And these suits don't take – they're not done in a week. They're not done in 2 weeks. They drag on and on. So you're going to see an administration that's spending an awful lot of time in federal district courts, slugging it out for good or for bad, you know, with people who are opposing what he's doing.
For people that would like to see a Trump third term, for people that are terrified of a Trump third term, the likelihood of any of that happening, because it is incredibly difficult to amend the Constitution.
Absolutely correct. Two-thirds of both houses of Congress, three-quarters of all the states. We couldn't get those two-thirds of both houses of Congress and three-quarters of the states to agree on saying that sunshine feels nice after a rainy day. Just not going to happen.
Thank you, David. Appreciate your time as always. 6:29 and a half. Somebody texted in and said, Refresh my memory. Did y'all discuss Biden's obvious dementia, all his unpresidential incidents, his connection as the big guy to his son's laptop? Trump is polarizing, but summing up his presidential term in a week is just crazy. Can we give the guy a chance? I don't know what you're listening, but this sounds like one of those people that get butthurt whenever you say Donald Trump's name and don't make the sign of the cross. I think we're very fair to the president, and David Schultz was very fair to the president. And as far as this Biden thing, God, for love, man, let it go. He's gone. He doesn't even know where he was, where he is today, probably. So just let it go. That's over with. 6:30, time for WWL First News. 6:44, 16 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Nice stretch of weather ahead, no snow, and really Chamber of Commerce weather for next week, which is really good, at least up until Wednesday as it stands now with the Super Bowl coming to town. Daniel Erspammer joins us now, CEO of the Pelican Institute. How you doing, Daniel?
Hey, good morning. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm all right. Tell me about the snow. How'd you make out?
We did pretty well. My wife and I were supposed to head up to Washington Mardi Gras. Mm-hmm. So we got delayed a few days, but gosh, our kids had a great time. We got about 10 inches in our front yard, and it was fun while it lasted, and then I was ready for it to go.
Tell me about the Mardi Gras. Did you get there ever?
We finally got there. We got there on Friday. We were supposed to be there Tuesday. It was great. It was a good party. The congressional delegation was in good spirits. It was good to see everybody. And King Rico Alvandia, of course, with his Duty, Honor, Louisiana theme. It was a great tribute to the troops, and it was a good time all around.
Let's talk about the importance of, since you mentioned it, of Steve Scalise and the Speaker of the House in the positions that they are and what that could mean for Louisiana. Mike Johnson.
It's just incredible. I mean, you look at our delegation punching above its weight. Speaker Johnson obviously has navigated a very challenging tightrope walk, and we'll see how that goes. Not only the Speaker and the Majority Leader, but Congresswoman Letlow is on the Appropriations Committee. Senator Cassidy will be chairing the Health, Education, and Labor Committee. Senator Kennedy, of course, on the powerful Judiciary Committee. So in terms of delegations Congressman Carter co-chairing the Congressional Black Caucus. So, you know, these are for a small state like us.
You got that right. That is disproportionate, really, if you look at it, being honest, Daniel, don't you think?
Absolutely it is, and it's a testament to the talent of those men and women, but certainly punching above our weight class there.
All right, so Louisiana Comeback Agenda is almost 2 years old now. How have things gone? What was the focus in the first 2 years? What still needs to be done? Give me a report card on that.
Yeah, it's gone pretty well. You know, if you look at the main components, our top two priorities were putting in place the structure of what became the L.A. Gator Education Scholarship Account Program and a significant transformation of our tax code to lower taxes, simplify the structure, and clean up some of those punishing taxes like the franchise tax. The legislature made progress on removing occupational licensure regulations that are unnecessary, that don't actually protect public safety, and allowing people who are in good standing and skilled and licensed in other states to have a fast track to get licensed here. So lots of really good things here in the first year and a half, or a little bit over a year. Coming up next, we've got to get that Gator program actually implemented, funded, and going so we can get kids into the schools that fit them best. We've got to really tackle spending prioritization, get that budget in shape so that we can continue to lower taxes and continue that process of simplification, and really start to tackle the administrative state regulatory reform, remove red tape so that we can really let people flourish here in Louisiana.
When you say kids find the school that fits them best, that's a phrase, I understand it, the phrase, but what exactly does that look like? What does that mean to specific kids in specific schools, Daniel?
Yeah, what that means is, you know, we've made a commitment in our country, in our society, to fund education, to ensure that children in Louisiana get a good quality education. And what we failed to realize is, as this basically this structure of education has been in place for over 100 years in our country, that, you know, even the very best school in the world may not be a fit for some kids. So recognizing that, what we've proposed and what the LA Gator program puts into place is to allow dollars to follow the child to the school that fits them best. And that could be a private school, a parochial school, a public charter school, a traditional public school, a homeschool program, or some hybrid mix of all of those that that fits them best. What we know is parents know best for their kids way better than just zoning everybody by zip code.
And I guess I'm wondering, when it comes to things like the professional licensure and this, I guess, simplifying the tax code somewhat, how much work needs to be done, and at what point does that begin to show results, or has it yet?
Well, we've already started to see some results. You know, we've been on the leading edge of recruiting new data centers. Of course, the big announcement, the Meta data center up in Northeast Louisiana for $10 billion investment there. You talk to local parish leaders around the state, they are starting to get more and more interest in business and jobs moving to those places. There's more work to be done, though, but we're already starting to see the fruits of some of that labor. But if we can continue to push that ball forward, look, we're competing in an environment that's not static. Mississippi, the governor there just yesterday called, and the House has passed a bill that would eliminate their personal income tax. Arkansas is on their way to doing that. Of course, Texas, Tennessee, Florida, all around us. So we're starting to catch up. We were way behind. Now we've got to keep going so we don't get behind again.
Let me take a break. We'll pay it when we come back. Talk about insurance. 6:50, 10 till 7. Mm-hmm. Traffic now, WWL. 6:56, 4 till 7. Tommy Tucker, WWL, on this Tuesday morning. Back with Daniel Erspammer, CEO of the Pelican Institute, talking about Louisiana comeback agenda. Almost 2 years old, talking about what's been done, what's already been done. You can find out more at pelicanpolicy.org/reports/Louisiana's comeback agenda. Daniel, real quick before we move on to insurance, somebody texted in, and I like to get the audience involved in this. Somebody said, call the LA Gator program what it is, a tax break for parents that already send their kids to private schools. Your thoughts on that texter's comment?
Yeah, you know, we hear that a lot, and it's just fundamentally not true. You look at the facts here. First of all, the first round of kids who are eligible to participate in Gator are those who are the least affluent in our community. If you're 250% of poverty or lower, these are the families that are, you know, some of them are already in private schools because they scrape together, grandparents, aunts and uncles chip in, and they sacrifice to make school tuition the top of their priority list. But this is an ability that every child has the opportunity, regardless of what zip code they live in, regardless of, you know, having to buy an expensive house in a nice neighborhood. Every kid should have the opportunity, and that's just flat out fair. So the idea that we're bringing class warfare into this, it just really doesn't fit with the outcomes we're seeing all around the country of these programs.
But what you say, class warfare, that's a kind of explosive term, I guess. Do you think that the text really meant class warfare, or?
Well, maybe not. You're right. I should be more gracious.
I think that the concern is that it would be eventually there will be credits for people or subsidies for people that are already paying private school tuition, and at some point that is going to kick in. That's factual, right, or not?
That will take place. We also subsidize high-income families to send their kids to public schools. The question is, should we have a bias toward just one type of school, or should we make our education system available to any type of situation so that, again, the environment that the family picks will fit those kids best? And it's not about income level. It's not about private schools or public schools. It's about making sure, if we're going to commit to an excellent public education, that every child has the same opportunity.
Let's move on to taxes. That to me is the top thing on the table, whether it's auto rates or whether it's homeowners even flood, which is, you know, beyond your control. But tell me what can be done about that, or what are your goals and sights set on the plan to lower the insurance rates here, because it's crazy.
It's absolutely crazy and out of control. And, you know, to their credit, the legislature has really been digging into this issue. We recommend a few things. One, of course, you've got to tackle the legal abuse that we have in the system. Two, you've got to really make some smart regulatory changes. We've got to encourage more companies to underwrite here. If we can do that, and we can get the trial lawyers out of the business of abusing the existing system, we can lower rates, and that won't happen overnight, but over the next couple of years, we'll begin to see it.
All right, thank you, Daniel. Appreciate it. Daniel Erspammer, CEO of the Pelican Institute. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk to our friend Walter Dublane, Associate Professor of Economics and Finance at UNO. We'll talk about tariffs. How do they work? What does the president want to do, President Trump? And to give credit where credit's due, his Columbia gambit, if you will, with the tariffs as far as accepting deportees, kind of work. Then we'll talk with Eric Smith, professor at Tulane's Institute of Energy, about three words, and those are drill, baby, drill.